Okay, so we're going to try to take off, try to explain the Ramban's, the way the Ramban learns the Dor HaFlaga, their sin. But as you'll see the Ramban, it's like, normally I wouldn't do this. It's like a very, it's one of those Rambans that's incredibly cryptic, and it's not meant to be understood. So I'm just going to, it's an idea. I'm basically going to give some sort of idea. Maybe it's a Ramban saying, maybe it's nothing else. The main point is the idea, but the idea touches upon really the fundamentals, the really fundamental ideas of Torah, Yesodia Torah. And through trying to understand this Ramban, like the background, you'll have to go into basically the first mitzvah in Yesodia Torah. And ultimately, hopefully, that from seeing what the sin is, it'll help bring out what the positive idea of, say, Kriya Shema and Kabbalah Samach Hashemayim, what the positive idea is. Kind of when you see the negative, when you see what's like the wrong way, the sin, the wrong way to do it, it'll help you hopefully have a certain appreciation of what it really means, Kabbalah Samach Hashemayim, and like Yichud Hashem, things like that. So we're going to start off really just the first few halachos in the Rambam. Just not sure like how much, basically I'm just trying to pull out one or two basic points from these Rambams. There's obviously a lot here. You know, if you want, you can take a, well, you don't really need it. If you know the guys, you know it by heart. Okay, so we'll start from Aleph. Okay, Perek Aleph, Halach Aleph, and Yesodia Torah. So Rambam says like this, Yesodia, Yesodus, Amar Chachmos, right, the foundation and the, of everything and the pillar of all science, right, of all Chachma. Leida Shiesha Matzai Risha. So there's a first primary existence, Vuhu Mamzi Kola Nimsa. And because of this, this existence is the source of everything, all everything else that exists. Vuhol Nimsa, Meshamay Varat, Uma Beinehem, Lo Nimtu El Mamitas Himtso. And everything, every other existence, right, the sky and the earth and everything in between, it only exists because of the reality of his existence. Okay, that's the first. Everything, there's one existence which is the source of everything else, and everything is dependent upon, only exists from his, because of his reality. Because God is real, therefore everything else exists. Okay, Ram's going to develop this idea. It's really one halacha. This Beis and Gimel are all part of halacha Aleph. It's broken up, but it's not supposed to be. It's really one halacha. V'im yala al hadash yuhu ena matzoi ein davar acher yachal lehimtsaos. So if you could conceive hypothetically, right, that God didn't exist, then nothing else could possibly exist, right? He's defining a certain philosophical idea of a dependent. Everything is dependent upon God for its existence. So insofar as it's dependent, therefore, if it's contingent upon his existing, right? So if he didn't exist, then there would be nothing else. Okay. Now there's, we'll just finish this up and then we'll come back to that point. That's the main point I want to bring out. Okay. The im yala al dash ain konim tzayim el vada mitzuyin. And if it should think that nothing else existed besides him, everything, all right, the sky, the earth, everything else stopped, didn't, never existed, didn't exist. Hu levado ye matzoy. But he alone would still remain existing, and he wouldn't become, he wouldn't cease to exist just because they did. Everything needs him. All other things are dependent upon him. They need him. But he's independent of them. He doesn't need them for his existence. He doesn't need all of them. He doesn't need even one of them. So he's totally independent of them, but they are, everything is dependent upon him. Okay? Now, there's two ways, there's different ways to like understand exactly what this is. One of the ways, and this is like a way that Rabbi Feder, Eli Feder, he remembers, he heard on a tape once, is Rabbi once gave a mashal, it's probably a famous mashal, you know, is that the idea of the ball underwater. You've heard that one?
Oh, yeah.
Famous one there. I don't like it. I'll tell you the reason why I don't like it for a second. But I don't want to get sidetracked by this. The ball in the water part. Oh, okay, good. Beautiful. So it's, the thing is, he's trying to show that it's like there's two ways you can conceive of a cause. You can say like a carpenter builds a table. right? So the carpenter builds the table. So even if the carpenter were to die and cease to exist, the table would still remain, right? The carpenter is like the efficient cause type, right? He's necessary for it to bring it into existence, to create it, so to speak, to form, give the table form. But you no longer need him once he does his initial action of creating the thing and making the thing. You no longer need him to exist. That's one type of, right? One type of cause. But then there's an idea of like, let's say a person takes his hand and he pushes a ball underwater, right? The ball is underwater. So long as the person exerts the force, he can maintain that state of the ball being underwater. But once he removes the force of the hand, then the ball will naturally rise, right? So it's saying something like that. It's saying that the world, its continued existence, needs God. That even though it's not that he created it, and if he were to cease to exist now, it can exist on its own. But rather, it's like continued existence is dependent upon him. And if he were to stop existing right now, then nothing else would continue to exist. Right? So it's all like dependent upon him constantly. And I think Rebbe wanted to say, and I think this is like, if you look in the Perushim, it's we say in the Bracha of Yotzer, or in the morning, is Mechadesh Betuvo B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh Bereishis. Something like that, right? So it's, what does it mean, B'chol Yom? What was so funny?
He asked
the
question
there. And that's what he said? Something like this?
Question. No, I have to read it to someone else.
Oh, somebody else. Okay, so this is the one that says, but what do you mean B'chol Yom Ma'aseh Bereishis? What do you mean Ma'aseh Bereishis has happened 14 billion years ago? What do you mean B'chol Yom? It's Mechadesh B'chol Yom is because it needs like a constant act of creation to sustain the world. Something like that. Okay, so that's like it's. Yeah, I don't know. What is that? That's like the ball underwater, mashal. Correct. B'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereishis. The ma'aseh bereishis has to be like renewed every day, so to speak. It's like constantly needs renewal because it's not like it doesn't exist on its own. It doesn't have its own independent existence that it can maintain itself, but it constantly needs HaKadosh Baruch Hu to sustain it. Right? So it's like a constant mechadesh. It's always maintaining it. Right? That's like the main philosophical idea is in this point, this distinction. I don't really like it for a reason. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I don't think it makes sense to say the Havamina is if God were to stop existing now, then the world would cease to exist. Because God doesn't exist in time. Obviously, the whole thing is a bad Havamina, right? Chiyal Das is not really conceivable that God would... that a necessary existence should stop existing, obviously. But still, it doesn't make sense to me to say that if today God stopped existing, that wouldn't, he's not part of time. Either he exists or he doesn't exist. You can't have it, he exists for, you know, 14 billion years and then he stops existing. That's not even, you can't even formulate something like that. It's like a mistake. You're looking at time like it's an absolute phenomenon. Like there's actually, the world is up to a certain point in time. And you could say at this point in time, what would happen if God was to stop existing? But the right way to look at time is really part of the creation. Special relativity shows us there is no specific moment of now. And therefore, what you really have to say is just, it means that his will, either whatever his will was, is to create a long world, a world that endures for a long period of time, or it's a world to endure for a short period of time. It's the world only exists as far as he wills it to exist. I don't want to get into the subtleties. I'm just mentioning that point. If you're interested in special relativity, you could take it up at a different time.
I don't even get what your problem is.
I didn't really want to go into it.
No, I get what you're trying to say. But it doesn't make sense because the whole thing is not
possible. Right, correct,
you
correct.
Can't, you can't say like, oh, particular, the whole thing that doesn't make sense doesn't really make sense. It's, the whole thing doesn't make sense.
The whole thing doesn't make sense. What do you mean, what kind of half of me that God doesn't exist?
That you can't,
he's a necessary existence. How can necessary existence not exist?
You can't make that argument that like, oh,
I know,
it doesn't really
I know.
Work. You're just like picking a random particular that...
Right. I'm just saying you have to formulate it a little bit more subtly.
Right.
It's more that like, if his... It's however long he will... Did it, you have to... Because the world... Once you realize time is not doesn't progress in like an absolute term, it's just, so to speak, the duration of events that either always are or always are not.
Mm.
So then what did he create? Did he create a world that's, you know, 100 billion years? Did he create a world that's 10 billion years? Did he create a world that's 5 minutes? It's, so to speak, from the very beginning of creation, you have all the events laid before you.
Okay.
Or do you don't? Okay, I shouldn't have mentioned it. Okay, I made a mistake. Okay, that's my first mistake. Okay, forget it. The main point, I really should. The main point is that it's everything is dependent upon him for existence. Okay, he's independent of everything else. He doesn't need them, and everything else besides him, besides God, is dependent upon him for its existence. Right? Its continued existence. Ball underwater. Okay, ball underwater. Okay, lefikach. Because of this point, his reality is totally different from everything else. That's a qualitative difference in the reality of a thing. Is it reality independent of everything else, or is its reality, its existence, contingent on something else? It creates like a different level of a reality. Like another analogy would be like a dream. Let's say you had a dream of a person. So that dream, it's like, it's a person. It's a dream person. I mean, it is an existence. A dream is a thing, right? It's not a vacuum, a dream, right? A dream is a... So if you have a dream about a person, so that person exists, but it's like a lower level of reality than you, right? You're in theory three-dimensional, four-dimensional person. It exists, right? This world. And now you have a dream. It's a figment of imagination. But it exists as a figment of your imagination. It's a lower level of reality. It's dependent upon your mind for... Right, so it's a lower level of reality. So once something is contingent, it's like a lower level type of reality than the thing it's contingent upon. Okay, so again, all these analogies are flawed in some degree, but the point is his reality is totally different because it's not dependent upon anything else. It's an independent existence, an independent reality. While everything else is qualitatively different from him because its reality is dependent, exists, so to speak, because of him. Right, the Chazal is a famous Chazal of when a term that Chazal used for God, they say Hamakom, right? Hamakom Baruch Hu, right? Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu on Pesach, right? So the term Hamakom is Hu Mekomo Sheolam Ve'in Olam Mekomo, right? He is the place of the world, and the world is not his place, right? I mean, again, everything's an analogy, but it means that the world needs to exist somewhere, so to speak. It exists. What gives it a place to exist is God. It's because of his reality there's a place for the world to exist. Obviously, I'm using place analogously, right? But the idea is like he doesn't need any place to exist. He's independent. He exists on his own. That's the nature of his existence. But the world doesn't. So the world needs a place to exist, and it's because of him. Because there's such a thing as the Matzoi Rishon. That's why everything else can be, right? If you look around you, you see all these beautiful things, right? Physical existence. The only thing that justifies it and allows it to be is because there's something else which doesn't need to be justified by anything else. There's a first existence, which that's it. It exists. God exists. He's necessary. There's no cause, prior cause to him. And because there is this one thing that doesn't need a cause for its existence, that's not dependent, that's why everything else exists and makes sense. Right, once, as a little bit of a side point, is if you just the whole process of causality, of if you say, the fact that you say that if I see this table, I know something must have made it. And if I see whoever made it, something made that person. That person has a father, and that person, he came from elements, and those things were made in stars, and those whatever. But if you always trace back something, you're always going to say, well, what caused that? What caused that? So in theory, that can go on infinitely, right? If you're always going to say, if every effect has a cause... So in theory, that can go on. It's called an infinite regression, which is a problem, right? It's a problem. If every effect has a cause, so then you end up going on infinitely. The whole thing makes no sense, right? So the only way that you have an idea of causality, where there's every effect has a cause, is because ultimately you can arrive at one thing. That you arrive at one thing which doesn't need a cause, and that justifies the entire process of causality. Okay, again, I'm getting into like these topics, but... The main point is the dependency point. Okay, good? And that gives it, and this point you will have to try to hear, is that's a different type of reality. An independent existence and something that's dependent. Those are very different types of ideas. Okay? Okay, lefikach eina mitaso kamitas echad mehem, hu shenavi omer vashem elokim emes. Right, that Hashem, God, right, is real. All right, he's real. Hu levado ha'emes ve'ein la'acher emes kamitaso. So he alone is real, and nothing else has the same reality that he does. So in a sense, the only thing that's really real is God. But everything else, since it's dependent upon him, it's contingent, So it's not really real. Okay, it doesn't have the same kind of reality. Okay, and that's part of what's this whole world. Everything in the world, since it's created, it's dependent. It doesn't exist on its own. It's not really real. In a sense, like we say, just like a figment of your imagination, a dream person, you'd say it's not really real, right? Because it's just part of your dream. Same thing, when you try to compare everything else relative to God, so you end up saying it's not really real. Only He's real, but everything else is just almost like a dream. It's not really, it doesn't have the same reality. And that's what we say, Hashem Lekechem Emes, right? Emes. He's real, nothing else is.
Are we going to explain that? I don't know what that means.
Right. Are we going to explain that? I don't think so. What do you mean?
No, that's my question.
What does that mean?
What do you mean? Yeah.
What does that mean? I should probably pause the tape for this.
Like, this seems pretty real to me.
It is. It's real in its own framework, right? As let's try my mashal, okay? What about the dream person? You think about a book in your imagination. So is that real?
No.
You're saying it's not real?
You thinking about it is real.
Right, but so it exists, it does exist, but you'd say it's not real.
What exists? The book?
I mean, the book, you have a dream about a book.
Yeah.
So is that book real?
No.
No, but I mean, it does exist.
What exists?
That book in your dream.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't exist. Well, it's not... Okay, let's pretend, right, once again, that God doesn't exist, you don't exist. So that book doesn't exist either, the dream book.
Okay.
It exists as a dream.
Okay.
It doesn't exist as a real book, but exists as a dream book.
Okay.
Right? So it has an existence, it's just not as real as this book. It's not absolutely nothing.
What does that mean, not as real? I guess that's what I don't get.
I kind of heard an argument.
Why is it like relative real? I've never heard of that before.
I relative heard an real. To me that there's an invisible pink elephant in the room. It seems like that's the same thing you're arguing over.
Well, no, I don't see that. Where?
Because in his mind, he created this idea that there's an invisible pink elephant.
Oh, okay, fine. So you'd say that...
In reality,
there is no invisible pink elephant, right?
I don't think it has.
But in his mind, there is he's thinking of an idea of an invisible pink elephant. That's real. As an idea in his mind, it exists.
But now you're saying that an idea exists, but not that an invisible pink elephant.
Well, that's my point. There's like, you can have an idea of something. You can dream up something in your mind, a dragon, right? So you say unicorns. You have these ideas in your mind. They exist as ideas in your mind. Meaning if you didn't exist, they wouldn't exist at all. But that's not the same thing as saying there exist dragons and unicorns in reality, in the physical world we're talking about. But you can't equate that with absolute nothingness if nobody's thinking about the unicorn. No person ever can see the idea of a unicorn. It would have absolutely no reality. It wouldn't even exist as anything, right? But now that people think about it, at least it exists as an imaginatory idea. That's a type of existence. It's not nothing. You can talk about the ideas and fantasies and imagine dream things that people talk about. That's an existence. But it's, you say it's not really real. That's not real. This book, the physical book on the table, that's real. But a book I can imagine in my mind, that's not real. Yeah, it's not the same reality as the physical book I'm touching. But it is real as a figment of my imagination. No?
I hear it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do hear what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. It's like that kind of thing. So you say the same thing. So you're not really real in the sense that God is real.
Right, I get that. Okay, fine. I just don't get the idea of like less real or more real. It's just real in different terms.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You say that the book. I'm thinking about the book. So that idea about the book, it's less real than the book itself.
That's what I'm saying. You can't compare those two. They're just different things. In terms of this, it's real. In terms of this, it's not real. You know what I'm saying?
It's like less dependency. Like the dream is dependent upon the person.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. Yeah.
As opposed to
It's
less dependency.
Correct. You might say something like that. Uh-huh. That could be one of the reasons. If you run a simulation on your computer, you simulate a city, SimCity. You guys have had that anymore? SimCity. So it's not a real city. It's a simulated city. But it's a real simulation. But it has a less of a reality than an actual physical city. A person were to build a city. That's a real city guy builds. But a simulation of a city, it's a simulation. Now let's say in your simulated city, right, you opened up a simulated computer store. And they simulated, in the simulated city, they had a simulation of another city in the simulation. That'd be even less real than the simulation itself. Right? Every, like, level, it becomes, like, less real, further removed from reality. It's like qualitative drops, drop-offs. So you have a similar kind of idea. Look, all these things...
Maybe things just different, though. Like a picture of a car and an action.
Yeah, you could say that's right. Also similar. That's also similar.
It's not as real. It's just picture.
It's...
trying to make it...
Yeah, you could say that. It's also similar.
It's a different thing. It's not like less real or more real. It's just different.
Well, I'm showing you apply the term of less real. You have some concept in your mind that these things become like they're images of the thing, but they're less real than them. It's like Plato's muscle of the cave, like the shadows of the thing. You know what I mean? It's the real. You recognize there's like a greater reality outside. This is just a reflection of some greater reality. It partakes of that thing, but it's less real than it. You have this idea in your mind of different levels of reality. Okay, it's not something I can. These are the kind of things you can't. You try to define them and say them as best you can, but like you kind of, you know, you try to get a certain sense, and over the course of your life, the ideas become a little bit clearer. But like I can't really say it much better. I don't fully understand it. Don't think I fully understand it myself. But there is a sense. I'm just showing you there is a sense where you have this intuitive sense where you can say things are less real than others.
I hear what. What's your name, Sam?
Sam.
I hear what Sam is saying with the dependency thing.
Yeah.
It's like you're going based on that. Like, okay, I guess I get it.
Okay, so that's good.
Where we're going on.
That's the context the Rambam is doing.
But I get it. Okay. I see what we're talking about.
Okay. Just try to get an intuitive feel for this. Right. Mm-hmm. We're not doing this in depth. I'm not trying to do it. I'm just trying to lay the basis for the Rambam. But these are these sodos, so yeah, I guess you should stop and examine them whenever you get the opportunity. Okay. Okay, now the Ram continues. V'hu she'atorah omeres ein od milvado. Kolomar ein sham motzei emes milvado kemoso. So, ein od milvado means that there's only one of these things that's independent of everything else, that's not dependent on anything. Right? Everything you can follow what is it dependent upon, right? Like the dream is dependent upon the person is dependent upon, I don't know, the earth, right? So everything's dependent, there's a chain of dependency and contingency, what it needs. And ultimately, you're going to arrive at one thing. You're not going to arrive at two separate things. Ein od milvado means there's only one thing, there's only one makom, right? There's only one place, there's only one God, one existence, and everything is dependent upon that one thing. There aren't two of them, right? There aren't two of these, and if they were going to be different or not, that's where you're going to get into yichud. But there aren't two of them, where half the things are dependent upon one, and that thing is independent, and half the things are dependent upon the other thing, and that other thing is independent. That's what the Rambam, Ein od milvado. There's only one of these things. There aren't two where you can have, this is where we're going to get to the Ramban, there aren't two of them. Okay, so either it's dependent upon this thing or it doesn't exist. Right? It's only dependent on Matzah Rishon. There's one Matzah Rishon. Okay? Ein od milvado. Okay. Now I'm going to skip Halacha Hey, where the Ram talks about his proof. Right, Amatzai Zehu Aloka Olam Adon Kol Aretz. Very, going into those terms, what exactly is the Rambam saying there? But, and he goes to the Aristotelian proof of the Manik HaGalgal. I'm not going to go into that proof. Okay, he says, Yedias Davrzeh, now in Halach Avav. Yedias Davrzeh, I think clearly it refers to the prior halachos, all the prior halachos. Mitzvahs Asei, Shinem Ranoche Shem Lokecha. And if you it enters your mind, meaning you believe it, it's not. It means you believe it. You can't. Ram doesn't use the term. I think if you know, because it's impossible to know something that's not true. But if you imagine, if you actually accept it as your belief system, that there's some other God, some other existence which doesn't depend upon God. Or he can mean something else, aloka acher. It could mean avodah zarah, but we'll, right? Then you're over below sas. Shnemar lo yilach Elohim acher ma'panai, v'kofer be'ikar. Shezehu ikar gadol shakol talibo. So these first five halachos, that's the ikar, this is the foundation upon which everything depends. And if you don't have this ikar, then the rest of the Mishnah Torah doesn't work, right? This is the ikar. So I don't want to get into the term of what does it mean, aloka, because avodah zarah is also kofer be'ikar. I'm going to focus on the first part, not the adon kol aretz, Let me be a little clear. There's almost like two parts here. There's like up until Halacha Dalad, the Rambam speaking like metaphysics. There's one existence, everything is dependent upon him, contingent existence, all these ideas, metaphysics, right? And then you get into he's a loka ha'olam adon kol aretz, means like he's like there's no other like sub deities beneath him that you should worship and you should, you know, he's getting into that area. So you can be kofar bikr through avodah zarah, is even if you believe that there's one ultimate existence but you want to worship other things. But also we're going to take on the kofar, the idea of kofar bikr, if you deny this, the metaphysical principles that we up until Halacha Hay. So I'm just kind of trying to, I don't want to, I'm basically skipping Halacha Hay for now. Okay, we're not going to get into that. So kofar bikr is if you deny this whole mitzvah, that's kofar bikr. This primary principle, right, that everything is contingent upon. Okay, good. That is the background. Now, if you want to look at the, okay, let me read. So I'll read the psukim of the Dor HaFlaga, and then we'll do the Ramban. Okay, so it's in Parshas Noach. It's Perek Yud Beis. I think it's Perek Yud Beis. Yeah, it's Perek Yud Aleph. Perek Yud Aleph, Parsha, and then the Parshas Noach. Which Pasuk? Pasuk Aleph. Okay. So, okay, it's Vayihi Chol Aretz Safa Echas Udvar Machadim. Right? The world was unified. I want to explain that Rashi. Rashi says Dvar Machadim. This is a takeoff from the Shir is based upon, it's like a different way of looking at what we've been discussing the past couple of weeks with Avram and Nimrod and Rashi and how he learned in the Malik, the whole thing. But it's giving it a different level. You don't need the prior Shirim to understand the Shir. Don't worry, you're good. But it's, I want to explain one that one Rashi that we kept coming back to. Is one of Rashi's, the way he learned, Rashi learns that the Dor HaFlaga rebelled against God. It was their Mori B'Makom. And he says, Dvar Machadim, he learns Dvar Achar Al Yichud Al Sha'olam. So what does it mean? It's Dvar Machadim is Al Yichud Al Sha'olam. They're fighting against the one, basically the one God. Yichud Al Sha'olam means the one existence of the world, of the universe, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they're fighting it. What does that mean? Right? They're building a tower against the Yichud Hashem. How does building a tower, how do you attack Yichud Hashem? How do you attack God? And how does building a tower an attack on Yichud Hashem? That was our difficulty with Rashi. Okay. So then we'll go to Pasuk Dalet. Okay, this is where what they said. Vayomru, and they said to each other, Hava nivna lanu ir umigdal. So let's build a city and a tower. The rosho vashamayim, and the head of the tower will be in the sky. Vinasa lanu shame, and we'll make for ourselves a shame. Right, that's the key word. Pen nafutz al pnei chol aretz, lest we be scattered over the whole world. Okay. Build a tower, head in the top of the towers in the sky, and they're going to make for themselves a shame, right? What does that mean? Rashi does not explain that, which is like amazing to me. Rashi does not explain that, and they didn't want to be scattered over the world. Okay, pasuk hey, vayirid Hashem liros ha'seir v'samigdash banu bnei adam. So then Hashem goes down to see the city and the tower that the Son of Man, right, had created, had started building. Right, I'm going to read that Rashi on Bnei Adam because the Ramban quotes it. Okay, Rashi Bnei Adam, Ella Bnei Mi. Right, what does it mean? Literal says Bnei Adam, the Son of Man. Of course, they're talking about human beings. Of course, they're Bnei Adam. Right, so who's it talking about? Ella Bnei Mi, Shema Bnei Chamor Megmalim. Does it mean the son of donkeys or camels? Of course, the son of a man. Right, what is it talking about? Ella Bnei Adam Harishon, right? It's Bnei Ha Adam, right? The man is the sons of Adam Harishon. Shekafo Es Hatova, he was Kafo Tova. The Amar Isha Shensati Madi, he blamed God, gave him a Chava for Lotovios Adam Levado. It's bad for man to be alone. He gave him a wife, and then Adam Harishon blamed the sin on the woman. There, he's Kafo Tova. God did a good for him, and he basically took that good and he turned it into like a bad, like you did a harm to me. You gave me a woman and she caused me to sin. Says, so these two, this generation, they God had saved them from the flood, right? And they used that very thing of the flood to rebel against him by saying he's going to bring a flood against us. Again, we don't want him to wipe us out. Let's go up to the sky. We're going to attack him. We're going to fight against Yichud Hashem. So they're fighting against the God who did the good for them and saved them. Everybody else got killed. These were the guys who were saved. Right, or from the sons of Noah who were saved, and they used that very fact that they were saved from the Mabul as part in their rebellion, right, to justify having to build a tower and to protect themselves from God who's going to wipe them out again, possibly. So they're Kafoy Tova. Okay, good. Okay, that's as far as, so then you, the rest of it is God goes down, he stops them from what they're doing, right? They're one unified nation, one unified world, and this is what they're beginning to do. Rashi learns, you're not going to stop them from what they're planning on doing. Somehow, it's not clear. The whole thing is not clear what exactly is going on, but it's some of God saying that, of course I'm going to stop them. How could I not stop them? Whatever they're planning to do, it's a tremendous evil. And of course, and even though they're unified, and in theory, great things could come from one unified world, great things could, they could accomplish great things, but look, this is the evil they're doing. How could I not stop this? Right, they're going to have different languages, not going to understand each other. And as a result, so they did get spread out. That which they were afraid of happening happened to them. They got scattered across the earth, and they stopped building that city. Okay. So, like I said, is earlier Chazal saying that the story of the Dor HaFlaga, it's sasum, it's like closed up. The Torah is not clear what exactly is going on. The Dor HaMabul, the Torah gives you a lot more information about what exactly was going on in the Dor HaMabul, right? How they were taking right the Bnei Elohim and the Bnei Sa'adam. Right, they were taking like the women. Right, they were there was a few strong individuals, and they were basically stealing the women from the other people. And there was gezel, and there was right. It was a breakdown in society in terms of the economic society and private property. And the Torah goes, it doesn't give you a tremendous amount, but at least explains to you where the sin of the Dor HaMabul lies. And the hashchasa, right, the world became totally corrupt, and civilization was falling apart. But the Dor HaFlaga with this tower and the city, and it's just like, what is going on, right? The whole thing is just, it's not clear. Torah is very cryptic about what's going on. So, as cryptic as the Torah is, the Ramban's much, much worse. Okay? So the Ramban is Perakit Aleph Pasuk Beis. So I'll read the Ramban. If you want to look inside, you can. It starts in the middle, where he says, Aval HaYodea. Right, a few lines before he says, "Anche flag al divrei Roseinu moridim beborim." Right, it's Perakit Aleph Pasuk Beis. Okay, I'm going to skip the beginning part of the Ramban. He goes through, he quotes Rashi's Chazal, the way Chazal learned, which is like Rashi. The Anche flag were rebelling against their creator, and then he does the Radak and Ibn Ezra Rodfei Abshat, and then he gives his explanation. Which I think it's like a different level of explanation for Rashi and Chazal. I don't think it's antithetical to them. Okay, so you listen, but I'm warning you. He says like this: Aval hayodeya perashem. But if you know the interpretation of how to translate what the word shame means when it says v'nasa lanu shame, right? What does the word shame mean? Right? It doesn't mean name, just name. Apparently, means something a little bit different, right? If you know what the word shame means, yavin kavanasam mimash amru v'nasalanu shame. So then you'll understand what their intent was when they said nasalanu shame. Right? Obviously, you have to know what the word shame means, but once you understand what the word shame means, you know the perish, so you understand what they're saying, nasalanu shame, we'll make for ourselves the shame. Okay, good. It doesn't tell us what shame means, but he just tells us once we know it, we'll understand what they're saying. V'yeda kam hashir shiyizmu b'migdal asoso. And once you understand what it means, Nasal Anushem, then you're going to understand just how high they intended the tower to be. Okay? It just says Rosh HaBashamayim. So how high is that? Right, how high is that? We don't know, right? Not clear. So when you understand the word shame, and you understand what it means, they're going to make for themselves a shame, you'll also understand how big the tower is going to be. Okay, good. We don't understand any of this. The Gematria
shame.
The Gematria. Oh, Gematria. Very good. Okay. The Yavin, and once you understand that, the Yavin, Kola Inyan, you'll understand the entire Inyan, okay? It's all going to open up. All you understand is the word shame, okay? Just all, it's so simple. It's so simple. The Yavin Kola Inyan, Ki Chashvu Machshav Hara, because they had evil ideas. Va'ona Shebaleim, and the punishment which came upon them, Lafridem Bilshonos Buva'artzos, and to scatter them in different languages and cultures and different lands. Mida Keneged Mida. It's just. It's Mida Keneged Mida. It's what they deserved because of their sin. Ki hayu kotzisim benetios, because they were cutting down the trees, the saplings. Okay? You guys familiar with the term kotzisim benetios? Okay, kotzisim benetios. Oh, I missed the Rama. I was supposed to do this as a Hakdama. If we'll just take a look from the Ramban for a second. In the Rambam, the end of Yesodia Torah, in Perek Dalet, he says, the end of Perek Dalet, the last halacha, Yigimel, he says, Vinyane Arba Prakim Elu, Shebe Shebechamish Mitzvos Elu. So the inyanim of the first four prakim in Yisodei Torah, right, which are deal with the five mitzvos of God's existence. We did Yichud Hashem and Avos Hashem, Yeres Hashem, right. So and the losase of right of Elohim Achirim. Heim Shecham Harishonim Koron Osim Pardes. So that's what these inyanim of the first four prakim in Yisodei Torah. It's basically metaphysics and Ma'aseh Bereishis and Ma'aseh Merkava, metaphysics and the Rambam's and physics. Right, something like physics. Himshachan, they called it paradise, like an orchard, okay, a garden, orchard, paradise. The word paradise comes from that, right? Paradise, paradise. It's like an orchard. Kamosh amru arba nichnasu the paradise. In the famous Gemara in Chagiga, right, four people entered into paradise, right? Ayideha tosa ayideha shem, right? It's like they entered into the parsha metaphysics, right? Rabbi Akiva, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, and Acher, right? They were tremendous. Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Elisha, Ben Acher, and Rabbi Akiva. They were tremendous. Chachamim, Gedol Yisrael. Lo kulam ha'ibam koach leidul hasik called varm aboryam. Right? They were not all able to understand. Like the Gemara, look what happened to them. One of them went insane. The other one became a kofar. Right? Rabbi Akiva is the only one who was able to nichnas b'shalom and yatsa b'shalom. But basically, bad things happened to a few of them. Even though they were great chachamim, these are the great right to right. Okay, I'm not going to go into the rest of this Rambam, even though it is interesting Rambam. But Pardes, so the Gemara there says that Acher, the one who became a kofar, right? So he was kotzis benetios, right? And Rashi explains there. It's a Gemara Chagiga. It's Yudalad Amud Aleph. He says kotzis benetios because since metaphysics is nimshal, it's used as like a orchard. So when a person like destroys like the system of metaphysics, he has a corrupt metaphysical idea which undermines the entire system. So it's like considered like the mashal. It's like you're cutting down the trees in the orchard, right? You're destroying paradise. He's cutting down the trees of paradise, right? He's destroying the whole metaphysical system. So that's the term of kotzim benetios. It means like it's a metaphysical sin, like a metaphysical evil philosophy, an evil metaphysical idea, okay? That undermines the entire system of metaphysics. And their sin, because back in the Ramban now, so their sin is similar to the sin of Adam Harishon, their father. So maybe it's because of that, it's Asher Banu Bnei Adam, the Chazal took off on their drash, and they said the son of Adam Harishon, because this generation, they partook of the similar metaphysical sin that Adam HaRishon did also. Okay, I'm not sure how much we're going to go into Adam HaRishon's sin. We're going to focus on these guys. V'histaka ki b'chol inyan ha-ma'abol hiskar Elokim. If you look in the ma'abol, so it always uses the shame of Elokim. Right? That's right? And Noach, ma'abol, it always is the shame of Elokim. U'b'chol inyan ha-flaga hiskar shame ha-miyuchad. But in terms of the flag, it's always the shame havaya of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Okay, it's always using shame of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, but in the ma'abol, it's always using Elokim. So there's a clue the Ramban's giving you. Ki ha-ma'abol b'avor ha-shchasas ha-aretz. Because the sin of the Mabul is because the world became destroyed, like they're destroying the world, civilization. The Haflaga b'avor shekatzu b'netios. But the Haflaga, their sin, was like a metaphysical sin. So it uses the Shem HaForash of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which, you know, Yesodia says Amar HaChachmas. Right, the Rambam, you know that? Yud-Hei Vav, right? It's the acronym. Yesodia HaYesodus Amar HaChachmas. So it's the Shem HaVaya, it's the necessary existence. So their sin was against the idea of God, the Shem Hashem. So it's Katsu B'netios, you're destroying the Shem Hashem, trying to. So that's why it uses the Shem Hashem. V'hinei anushim b'shmo agadol, and they were punished through the Shem Hashem. Right? It says, v'yirid Hashem. Right? It's the Shem Havaya. V'zet tam hayirida, and this is the reason why it says v'yirid Hashem, that the Shem Hashem went down to punish them. V'chein b'midas stone. Okay? And this is a clue we'll take up. Maybe, I don't know if we will, but by Midas Tom also, you'll see they use the shame, the same idea. It's always the shame of Ayah by Midas Tom also. V'amaskel Yavin. Okay? That's it. Clear as a bell. That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's even worse than the Torah, this Ramban. It's like the Torah is like cryptic, but this Ramban gives you nothing. Right? It's like what... Right, Maskel Yavin. So that's, generally it means Maskel Yavin means don't try, don't bother. Okay, you're not going to understand it. You're just going to ruin your own mind and come to corrupt ideas.
Is that really what that means?
Maskel Yavin means it's like his Derech Emes. When he says Derech Emes or Maskel Yavin, it's his system. It's Ramban's system of metaphysics. And if you're not holding in a system, then you're just going to get the wrong idea. It's disaster. Don't try.
That's
don't.
Like the weird stuff that he says.
Yeah, the weird stuff that sounds just like this. It's like not worth it. Okay, so normally I would never do this, you know, it just happens to be there's an interesting idea I had, because it's so easy, just all you gotta do is understand the parish of the word shame, and then it all just flows, you know, you just gotta get one lucky guess, and you're good, right, it's like, it's just worth it, try what could shame mean, right, and then just see, maybe it'll work, no, okay, I'm joking around a little bit, okay, so what is going on, okay, I was really trying to work on the Rashi. Okay, that's my excuse here. Okay, I'm really just trying to explain Rashi, where he says, "Yichudo Shalom." How does building a tower, an attack on Yichud Hashem, right? And last week we were discussing. I'll just summarize last week pretty quickly. Is we were showing how, like according to Rashi, the whole philosophy of rebelling against the Creator, right, and attacking the Shem Hashem. It's very, according to Rashi, it's like it partakes of all the elements that makes up a Malik, right? If you study a Malik and you study the way Rashi learns the Dor HaFlaga, it's they're attacking the Shem Hashem. Like a Malik is Melchem Hashem Me Malik Me Dor Dor. It's an eternal battle between the Shem Hashem and a Malik. A Malik tries to destroy the Jews, right? And we saw the Dor HaFlaga, this is from a different Jew, they try to kill Avraham. Nimrod was the king of the Dor HaFlaga. You know the story that they tried to throw Avram in the Kivshon Eish? Nimrod, you ever hear that story? Whatever. He tried to throw him into a burning furnace, so he tried to kill Avraham. And Nimrod used propaganda. That was his method. Gibor Tzai Lifnei Hashem, like Rashi learned. And the idea of the military machine, right? The warfare to unite the people. And we had other things, the idea that there was shalom being between them, right? They were shalom, they were unified. Similar to like Amalek, the Nazis, and there's like one guy like Nimrod who is the leader. Right? Okay, so we developed that last week, the idea that there's a philosophical idea of Amalek, and the Dor HaFlaga fits all the philosophical characteristics, even though they are not technically from Amalek. Obviously, Amalek wasn't born, but the philosophical idea of Amalek is something that you don't need a biological. You don't have to be a biological. That was the Reb Moshe Soloveitchik's chiddush, that you don't have to be a biological descendant of Amalek to be partake of ideological Amalek. Amalek is any nation which adopts a certain ideology, which is the Dor HaFlaga really seems to have. So you become Amalek. So, okay, that's what we kind of did last week. I don't think you really need that. It kind of fills out the idea a little bit. But the question that bothered us is like, why did the door flood? What are they attacking God for? What's bothers them about Yichud Hashem? And Amalek also is the similar thing. What is Amalek? Mechom Hashem and Amalek being door to door. Like, what is their problem that they have such a hatred for the Shem Hashem? Like, what bothers them so much? And just the general phenomenon that Rashi says of Gibor Tzayef Hashem is Yodim Boron. They know their Creator. Umiskavim Limrod Bo. You know, there's different types of sins, but the sin of they know about God and they have kavana, they're intentionally trying to rebel against Him. So what's the sense in it? It's like almost like you can understand the person doesn't know about God, or they believe in Avodah Zarah, they have followed their taivas. You know, they're Baal taivas, right? They wanted to rob, they wanted to take all the women. You can kind of like make sense of that. And they don't even think about God. They don't even think about God. That's not on their mind. That's not the world that they're living in. They're not metaphysicians. They're Bali Taiva, right? They're corrupt Bali Taiva. But what's the sense of somebody who knows they understand the idea of God and then they have kavana to rebel? So that's the kind of idea I was trying to work on. It bothered me. What drives a Malik crazy? And what's the idea of a door flugger? What are they doing? They're building a tower against Yichud Hashem. What's the sense in the thing? So I saw this Ramban and I thought of an idea. Maybe the Ramban means it, maybe he doesn't, okay? But if the Ramban doesn't mean, I'm explaining, trying to explain Rashi. Okay, so that's my matir. That's my matir for this. Okay, so I want to say like this, is what does it mean, yodea peir shame? So I want to say the idea of shame, it doesn't mean just like a name, okay? It means shame is like an idea, an existence, a reality, right? Like the Shem Hashem, like a shame, right? The Shem Hashem, Yoshev Bein Akru, from a shame. Or by Avodah Zarah, shame, lo saskir, shame Elohim Achem, lo yisham al picha. It's like the shame is like a name, like a real name, like a reality, a real existence. Okay, what they were trying to do was they were trying to make themselves into a real existence, a necessary existence. No, I shouldn't say necessary, independent existence. Okay, they knew they were created, and they knew that they were underneath God's rule, because His malchus, His sovereignty, because they saw what happened in Dor HaMabul, that when the Dor HaMabul didn't follow His rules, and they didn't construct society in such a way that God approved of, so what He did is He wiped them out. And what they were trying to do was they were trying to remove themselves, they were rebelling against the king of the world. They were trying to remove themselves from underneath His malchus and separate themselves so they're no longer dependent upon Him, where they no longer need Him and they no longer have to listen to Him. And if He disapproves of them, it's not going to matter because He's not going to be able to destroy them. They're trying to remove themselves from underneath His malchus and set themselves up as a shame, as like a separate, real, independent existence where they no longer need Him. And they're no longer conditional upon His approval, His will, and they can exist on their own. Nasa lanu shame means make ourselves into a shame. Okay, make ourselves nasa lanu shame, make us a shame. Okay. Now, how high was the tower? How high was it going to be?
Above the water.
Above the water? No, okay, no.
It was like marble.
No. How do you make yourself? How do you make yourself an independent existence? How do you go about doing something like this? This is the idea they have. Okay, you want to rebel against your creator and remove yourself from. He's the Melech Olam, right? He's the Melech Olam. But now you want to set yourself up as a separate, independent sovereign. You're going to rebel against the king. You're going to break away. How do you do that?
Go where he goes.
What?
Sit in his chair.
In his chair. I go with this guy. So I say they're building a tower. Okay? The tower, how high was it supposed to be? It wasn't supposed to have an end. Okay? It was infinite. It was a eternal project. Okay? If Rosh HaBashamayim meant that we're going to start building and the next generation is going to continue and the next generation is continue and it's just going to get higher and higher, bigger and bigger, wider and wider, and that's forever in all eternity, this tower is going to just get bigger and bigger. Okay, the tower was an infinite. It was supposed to be an infinite tower. It wasn't supposed to have a stop. The idea was they were starting a project, a city and a tower, which is going to be an eternal project, and every generation is going to be locked into this project. And they're setting up society in such a way where there's they had control of the whole world, or all society in that, certainly in that, what they believed to be the whole world, right? And they had set up rules and a structure. It was a very organized society. If you see, you know, Sofa Achas is Dvar Machadim, right? They had one controller, Nimrod, was in control of the whole thing, and he had his minions, his legions of Nazis and beneath him, right? And they had control, and they had set up a system and a rule and order that basically it's like a communistic society where they had total control over the society, and they had put in place a system of rules that would ensure that it maintained forever, and that this project and this city, this tower that they were going to build, was going to permanently be built up forever. And oh, they're always going to be involved in anybody who tried to cause any trouble and to say, hey, what the heck are you doing? This is a tremendous waste of resources, you know, or this is a crazy plan. It doesn't work. Like Avraham, right? Avraham, we showed he recognized the Shem Hashem, you know, 8 years before. He was a causal thing. But if he starts fighting with him and saying this is a stupid idea, it doesn't really make sense, right? You can't really do this. They'll kill him. Like they tried to do with Avram. They threw him in the Kivshon Eish. So you can set up, the idea was to basically get control of the world, like the Nazis were trying to do, take control of the world, and establish a system and an order that will be permanent and stable. And this project is what mankind was going to be forever involved in. This is their idea. Okay, they could set up a permanent project, endeavor, that will make man eternal by permanently removing the Shem Hashem from the world. They're going to set up a world which removes the whole idea of God. Anybody who holds by the Shem Hashem will be killed. And they're going to set up a society and an order and a project, an organization of society, which is totally removed from the Shem Hashem. It would be the opposite of what we hold Yemos HaMashiach will be. Right? We hold Yemos HaMashiach will be a permanent world that's unified, a unified world under the Shem Hashem. And the whole pursuit of the world will be into Chachmas Hashem, and that is a stable world that can last Le'olam. That's the, you know, Olam Korin Teremban, that's Olam Haba. That's Yemos HaMashiach, right? There's like a permanent state of society that mankind can live in under the Shem Hashem, where everybody recognizes God, the Kabbalah Olam Malchus Shakai, everybody accepts his sovereignty, there's only one king, and everybody recognizes the Shem Hashem and pursues the idea of God. They had an idea of doing the exact opposite. They wanted to lock the world into like a permanent state where it doesn't recognize God. Okay? And anybody who tried, they were going to kill. And they had set up a system through their wisdom, through their intelligence, that would ensure that that would be the case. Okay? It would be like if Hitler had won World War II, if he had taken over the world. Let's say Hitler was successful. If he had taken over the world, like, what do you do now? You've killed every Jew. Now, what do? You try, if you're Hitler, right? You put in place a system that will ensure that your ideology doesn't go away in the next generation. You try to put in place a system where it'll forever be, the world will always be locked into this ideology of Amalek. Okay, and that's what they're trying to do. But it's kotzitz benetios, because it's based upon a metaphysical idea, right? A corrupt metaphysical idea that man, through his willpower, through his ability, he's able to remove himself from God, right? He's able to rebel and become independent. Okay, I'm just going to say this as a little bit of a side point. There's a similarity with Adam Harishon, right? Is when you eat from the Eitz Hadas, right? Is Ve'yisim Kelo Elokim Yodea Tov V'ra? Is you're going to be like God, right? And if it's the idea is somehow you think that through the act of rebellion, the mice of rebellion, you can break away from Matzoi Rishon, and you could achieve some sort of metaphysical independent existence. Okay, it's like a man has the metaphysical corruption is that man has that ability. He is a tzalma, he's a unique creature, he has ability to his free will, nothing else has that. And man, through his free will, he can rebel and break away. And really, it's like you look at the ideas, they looked at God as like a tyrannical king. He's just trying to control you. He just wants you to listen. He's giving you laws, and if you don't listen to him, he's going to create a flood and wipe you out. Really, he's just like the Nachash says. He's just trying to control you. He's just trying to manipulate you. Rather, he knows that if you have the ability within you to rebel and break away and become your own independent person, you're no longer going to need him. And that's what this tower was. It was an endeavor to take the world and remove it from before God. Okay, what Avraham told them is that you can't do that. There's no such thing as removing the world from before God. There is no other place to exist. Ein od milvado. There is no other makom. Either he's mihu makom sha'olam. Either you exist before God or you don't exist. Right? We say a person who has this philosophy, it's like he's nekar min ha'olam. He's like uprooting himself from the world. You don't exist. Fools, if you do this, you're going to see there's no existence besides before God. And either you accept him as your king and then you recognize you live under sovereignty and your everything you do is in his universe and there's nothing you can do. There's no metaphysical ability that man has to will himself to be free from God and to separate himself from other gods' malchus. And it's an impossible idea. The whole idea is corrupt and it doesn't make any sense. To which they responded into the Kivshon Eish. Right? Well, we don't care. As in they didn't hear the argument. And if it doesn't really make sense. The idea doesn't, it doesn't really make sense. But there is a certain, it's a metaphysical corruption. It's a metaphysical system. There's a lot of corrupt metaphysical systems out there. I think this is the one that underlie the sin of the Dor HaFlaga. Okay. Now, I just want to say one thing. Is a final point. If you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, okay, Rambam Hilchos Deos, it's Perek Beis Halacha Gimel. So, you see, I don't know whether necessarily you can believe that this was actually, according to the Ramban, or anyway, even if you know, was this actually their metaphysical system? Did they really have metaphysicians working for Nimrod who were espousing this philosophy and teaching it? It's kind of like an abstract metaphysical point. It's hard to believe necessarily that they actually had like a worked out corrupt metaphysics that through our act of rebellion against God, I mean, they were fighting a war against God. So, I mean, maybe that's in fact how they justified it. They could have been big chachamim in a certain sense, obviously. And it could be that they really, I do think, that's my leanings, is that they actually did have, according to Ramban, the actual kotzeis binatios, they really had, this was their official the metaphysics of the state. This is the religion of the state. This is what they were doing. They're engaged in a war. But it could be he sold it to the population, like we said, as a different thing. They're building supports for the world. Who knows? But I want to make this point, is that, you see, you can have a metaphysical theory as like in a book, like Plato has his metaphysics, the Torah has its metaphysics, Aristotle metaphysics, modern day, it's a metaphysical system, is what you hold about reality and existence and contingencies, independence, existence, how many could there be, Yichud Hashem, right? You can get involved in like overt, conscious, thought out metaphysics and discussions and what's the truth, okay? But I want to make the point is that there's also the unconscious has a metaphysics of its own. Okay, the unconscious doesn't just have, you don't just have like unconscious instincts, or you have a certain unconscious aggression against somebody you don't know about, or you have an unconscious fantasy that you want to, the certain things you want to do, and certain taivas you have, and you know, the unconscious has, besides instinctual desires that you're unaware of, you also have unconscious theories and unconscious systems of belief that you're unaware of. And those theories they underpin the entire framework that your instincts exist in, okay? Let me read this Rambam Halacha Gimel, and then I'll try to develop this final point a little bit. The Rambam in Perek Beis Halacha Gimel says like this: V'yesh deo she'asu l'adam linog behem bebeinus. In general, a person in his personality traits, character traits, his midos, he should go to the middle path. But in two instances, we're going to take one of them up, is he should not go to the middle path. El yisrachek ad hakotza acher. He should go to one extreme. V'hu go v'alev. And that's egocentric, being a haughty person. Okay, gaiva. She'ein haderech hatova she'adam anav bilvad. The appropriate thing is not simply be the middle path. The person has some humility, is humble, right? That's like in the middle path. No. He should be a very, very low spirit, exceedingly low spirit, low position, idea of himself, of what he is. He wasn't just the middle. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go to the middle path of Anav. He was anav moed. He went to an extreme of humility. Okay, extreme humility. Ulefigach tivach chachamim moed moed have a shval ruach. Okay, so they said their command you should be shval ruach, the extreme like Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yod amru shekol amagbia libo kafar be'ikar. Again, this is the point I want to bring out, is whoever has gaiva, and everybody has gaiva, right? We're not all Moshe Rabbeinu. But whoever has any gaiva, he's kofar be'ikar. Okay, it certainly obviously means, we have to explain, what does it mean kofar? Every person's a kofar be'ikar, right? We're not all Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemar v'ram levavecha v'shechachta shemakecha. So you see through when your heart gets high, when your mind gets your gaiva, so then you forget God. V'od amru b'shamted is be'ganzis ruach v'afilu mitzasa. Right, person, you put him in nido, he's excommunicated, right? If he, any person who has any gaiva, even a little bit. Okay, so what does it mean? See, gaiva is kofar be'ikar, is that a person has a certain unconscious fantasy and theory about himself. Okay, and it comes out in different forms. I'm going to focus on the specific form of gaiva and the fantasy of immortality. Okay, a person has a certain feeling about himself that he really is immortal. Now, if you ask a person consciously, do you know you're going to die? Most people will say, yeah, I think I do. Everybody else dies. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man, right? And therefore, Socrates will die. So most people can follow that logic, and most people accept that consciously. But underlying is a certain fantasy they have of immortality. Now, that fantasy, it's not the same thing as you saying that a person has an unconscious instinct that he needs to hurt somebody else, or he has a certain unconscious desire for a certain woman. Okay, it's the fantasy of immortality. It's like a theory, in a sense. It's a metaphysical theory that I really exist. I will exist forever, and there's something special about me. And I can't I'm independent. I don't need anybody else. I mean, it's like I'm a self-contained existential being, and I don't need anything else. And that's like gaiva. That's the source, the root of gaiva is this sense that a person has about himself, and that's really kofar be'ikar. You don't lose your chilek nom haba for this. It's not the same as the dor flaga, but the nature of the unconscious fantasy of a person of gaiva is that there's some. It's kofar be'ikar because he's setting himself up as like some sort of independent existence where he doesn't need God. And that fantasy of immortality, it's a theory, it's a metaphysical theory, and it underpins the whole instinctual world of a person. We discussed this at a different time, is the instincts, the whole desire for the instincts, even like the sexual or the appetitive, is once you cut out the fantasy of immortality, the instincts lose their allure. Like Chazal say, if you find the Yetzirah is overpowering you, think of the Yom Misa. Right, once you recognize that you're mortal and you're going to die, then the whole instincts, a person's taivas, they exist in this metaphysical framework that he's immortal. And once he realizes, if he were to deal with that unconscious instinct, and to the degree that you can deal with this theory, and you could undermine it, so that's really a nava, and that really sets up a whole, a control person can control his taivas to a much greater degree when he undercuts this fantasy. Okay, but the main idea is that this the idea of Gova Lev and Kofar Be'ikar, it's like the unconscious theory that controlled this society. It's an unconscious metaphysics. And in terms of like the positive idea, when you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, right, when you're recognizing there's only one existence, one God, it's almost like, I think it helps to almost in contradistinction to this other idea. That there's the point is you're recognizing there's only one Melech HaOlam, there's nowhere else to go, and there's Ein Od Milvado. You're recognizing there's only one God, and if I don't exist before Him, then I don't exist. Okay, that's the Kabbalah Amach Hashemayim Menichad Hashem, is realizing that there, on a metaphysical, psychological plane, that there is no other, there is no way for me to rebel and set myself away from God. Either I accept His sovereignty, His malchus, I recognize it's a good thing for me, it's not trying to dominate me and control me and to make crazy demands for His own tyrannical enjoyment, but it's really a good thing, His malchus, and He's the only existence, there's no other way to break free, there's nowhere else to go, The Nimrod, the Dwarf Logog, the person's Gaiva, they're all fantasies, they're illusions. There is nowhere else to go. It's a corrupt metaphysical idea to believe that you can somehow rebel and set yourself up and create a shame in some sort of system that can exist independent of God. Right? So Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Va'ed, it's the appreciation of his Malchus. It's a Shevach. You appreciate his Malchus, his sovereignty, the world he created, and you don't resent it, and you're not trying to run away from it and rebel against him. You accept it. You accept that his existence is the only independent existence. Everything is contingent upon him. Everything is underneath his control, his Malchus, and there's nowhere else to go. And that's really, I think, just like one of the main points to come out of this thing is to appreciate the seeing what the negative idea, what the false metaphysical idea and the false emotion and fantasy is, maybe can help you appreciate what, you know, Shema and Kabbalah Samuch HaShemayim is in a positive sense, what you're accepting upon yourself, the idea that you're rejecting when you're saying Kriya Shema. Okay, cool. Very good. So Sam is asking, how does building the tower express or fulfill Nimrod's desire to create this idea of becoming an independent, rebelling against God? How exactly does the tower bring that about? Right? So I'm speculating to a certain degree how exactly it worked. But I'm like kind of looking at a couple levels. One is like there's a practical level to it. If you want to have the world be organized in a permanent, stable way, you can't, it's like you need the world has to be involved in something. You need a project. Like a building a tower that goes infinitely high, that's a project that can consume mankind's resources, that can consume their energy, they're involved in it. It's something that you can organize society around. It's not so easy to lock the world into a permanent, stable state. So the way you do it is by you create this central project, this government boondoggle, like we spoke about before, right? That draws mankind's resources and that every generation can keep adding to and building higher. It's otherwise just ideas don't last forever. You need to like take those ideas and turn them concrete and make like, it's almost like in a similar way of like what mitzvahs do. Like you can have this abstract system of ideas, but then you need like physical mitzvahs. You need to take a luv and an esrog and give shevach l'Hashem. And you need to sleep in the sukkah. You have to eat matzah, right? And speak with ideas. Just ideas in abstract, people are not such great philosophers and metaphysicians. But when you make that concrete and you create a whole tower and everybody, there's mitzvahs that Nimrod comes out with. Everybody has to put one brick when they turn bar mitzvah. They add another brick. And then when they get married, they put another brick. And if you don't, you know. So they create a whole system. You know, we don't know exactly what their system. The Midrashim talk about that. When one brick fell, how they would react to that. Like there's a whole ritual that surrounded the building of the tower. Okay, and that's like one critical thing. And as a practical implementation of a metaphysical system, you can't just for the metaphysical system to reach the masses, you can't just have ideas. They're not going to understand what the heck you're talking about. So you make a whole system and rules that embodies your system of metaphysics. That's sustainable. That has permanence. Okay. The other thing is you got to realize like what they're doing. This tower was going to be like the embodiment of mankind. It's like the bottom of the tower was the first generation, and you're joining up with the tower. It's like the eternal tower that all mankind is part of, and your work goes into it. You become part of the tower. Mankind as a species becomes eternalized and unified through the building of this eternal tower that gets bigger and bigger. So like the tower takes on a certain mystical properties of like the embodiment of mankind and like the spirit of mankind goes into the tower. And like, you know, you have to kind of think a little bit how these Avodah Zarah guys think, but like you can kind of like imagine a little bit how the society looked at that infinite tower, the eternal tower that they were all going to become a part of through their work. And if you wanted to be eternal too, you've got to join in the work of the tower. And if you don't join in the tower, then you're going to be, you know, not going to be eternal, not going to be part of it, and they're going to kill you. You know, so it kind of, Torah doesn't give you the details, and we don't really know, but that's kind of how I'm like, I can see. And the way I'm really saying is that based on the psukim, is it would have worked. It would have worked. There is a possibility, so without HaKadosh Baruch Hu getting involved and going down and mixing up the languages and destroying them, so then this plan works. The world has, you can set up a permanent, the world can get locked into a state where basically no good can ever come out. If the Nazis take over the world, that's the end of it. You don't necessarily, there's not necessarily a way for the world to break out of a state like that. Just like we hold Yimos Mashiach as a permanent state, and the world will never break out of that state. Once it gets locked into that state, it can never come out. The same thing with this. If the Nazis take over the world, Amalek runs the world, Nimrod, if he had been successful, and God had intervened, it would have been, that's it, it would have been successful. It would, you would have, you would, the world would have, we'd be building towers, right, building this huge great tower. I mean, it would have fallen over a long time ago. They weren't great, you know, they didn't have great science, but the point is like this philosophy, it could be perpetuated if you know what you're doing. You can really control the world in such a way where you take away people's rights and privacies and really, like under communism to a certain extent, you can do these things. And if God hadn't intervened, apparently, you know, things would have, it would have been that way. It's good.